Okay, you guys, let's go ahead and get started. I knew this would be a smaller group than last week. It usually is, and I, as I said to some of you a few minutes ago, I apologize for putting this on Dean's Day. This was not, it's never been on Dean's Day before, and we've done it the same time every year. So I don't know how, for some reason, this year they collided. But those of you that have something to turn in the next 29 minutes, you don't need to be here. You can go turn it in. Hopefully you guys are, those of you that are here, are done with whatever you had to do today, right? Okay. Good. Well, the we're going to, and I'll keep this easily to an hour, I think. This is usually something that's a little bit quicker. How many of you are seniors that are graduating in a couple weeks? Okay. And the rest of you juniors? Okay. Those of you that are juniors, we're going to do this again in September, as I said, so if you just want to hear this very similar spiel again in September, you're welcome to. Don't forget that, and I think I'll remind you probably at least once again here, that tomorrow, same time but not in this room, over in our office at HPA, Dr. Terragino from Robert Wood Johnson is going to be talking about the multiple mini interview procedure at her school. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Someone emailed us a question about this afternoon, and is Andrew here? No? He may be an alum. You may not have even heard, you may not even know what I'm talking about, you may not have heard of this. They're called MMIs, or multiple mini interviews. And she'll be here tomorrow, for those of you that it applies to talk to you about that. It is not everybody. So if there are 140 of you applying to medical school, I would imagine this is going to apply to, I don't know, roughly 30% of you that are applying to a school that might have the MMI procedure. Most of you it will not apply to. But we can talk a little bit about whether or not tomorrow's a good, worth your time to come to in a few minutes. But don't forget that it's tomorrow, 4:30, Robert Wood Johnson in our office. Okay? You should have a couple handouts in front of you. This is one of my favorite quotes about med school interviewing. Really what we're going to do today is talk about the basics of effective interviewing at health professional schools. I probably will do a lot like I did last week and just talk about med school. How many of you here are vet or dental? Good. Yay. Vet or dental? Dental? Dental. Good. Great. Well, you know, I changed the language in all of this to talk about health professional school, but if I slip into the med school routine, please just know that your interviews are very, very similar. I mean, they're constructed, I don't know how or why, but for dental school especially, they're going to pretty much match what a medical school interview is like. So you can confidently sit there for the next hour and know that you're getting information that will be helpful to you, okay? A lot of this is, in terms of effective interviewing at a health professional school, a lot of this is common sense. And a lot of it, I hate to say this, but it's a reality of the situation, a lot of it comes down to your personality. And we can't change that right now, probably. I mean, you can certainly do some things to modify your personality in a professional setting, but you are who you are, and on some level, you should be proud of that, and we shouldn't be telling you to try to change your personality. But what our job is, I know Ms. Deutsch and I feel like what our job is really is to help you work on the things that you can control. Your amount of common sense, you may not be able to control. Your personality, you may not be able to control. But there are a lot of other things you can't control. It's actually not too hot here today.
I'm going to be talking over the pep band. Yay.
And I'm going to talk to you about your concerns about interviewing, okay? Here's the information about Robert Wood Johnson coming tomorrow. The schools that for 2012 are using this multiple mini interview are Robert Wood Johnson, Stanford, UC Davis, UCLA, University of Cincinnati, and how many Canadians are here? Several of the Ontario schools, okay? McMaster's the one that kind of invented the MMI, and I'm not sure which other Ontario schools are using it or not, but it's something you can find out very easily by going to their website, okay? Those of you that are applying to one of those schools, certainly New Jersey residents or California residents might be, or Canadians, might be wise to try to come tomorrow, okay? There are other ways you can certainly find out about the MMI, but it's something that's fairly new in the med school interviewing world, and in fact, really the pilot year for most of these schools was just this past year, okay? Actually, before we get to that, does the band walk around campus, or does it just stand out there? Okay. Because it's gone by my office before on Dean State, so I'm hoping they'll play here for a little bit and then kind of walk that way. Right? Actually, before we get to your concerns about interviewing, I do want to give you some just basic facts about, or at least give you a sense of the nature of what health professional school interviewing is like in most schools. And again, this is not the MMI schools. This is all the others in the country. How many interviews can you expect to get? It's really hard to predict. But last year, for instance, for the 2010 group applying to medical school, not the ones applying right now, but the ones who applied last year, the range of interviews among our applicants was from 0 to 18. Okay, 18 is incredibly high. So you should not be expecting to get 18 interviews. That was a little bit of a fluke. I think the average was when you added up everybody, the average was six something. But even that varies from year to year. Some 1 year it was 4. There's no right number of interviews. All you really need is one, right? But you know, to give you some sense of the numbers we're talking about, last year it was 0 to 18. 10 to 30% of applicants, not Princeton applicants, but all applicants generally get an interview. That's, again, a range depending on the school. But I guess my point is if you get invited to interview, you have made, you know, you've made it over a significant hurdle in this process, okay? I mean, you're one of usually 10 to 30%. And again, these numbers are very typical, but a typical situation at a medical school would be they do about 500 interviews over the course of the season for usually over 5,000 applications to fill a class of around 150. That doesn't mean they accept 150 people. Most medical schools accept more than their class size because you don't all go there. But those are the numbers, and some medical schools last year were saying they had 10,000 applications, but that was an unusual thing. So these are very rough numbers. There are a couple schools in the country I know that do 1,000 interviews and not 500. But generally speaking, that's the picture we're talking about in terms of the funnel you're going through when you get invited to an interview, okay? When do they usually happen? I think I mentioned this last week, but anytime from late August till almost this time next year, depending on the school. Most medical schools are finishing interviews by March sometime, but not all. And there are some that interview into April, and some of them interview all the way to May 1st. Some schools don't even do it the same every year. They kind of hedge their bets, and they'll invite another round of people to interview in March or April because they're afraid they're not going to fill their class. And so it really is going to vary from school to school. Those of you that get interviews as early as late August are going to be a very small number of you. So don't feel like that applies to most of you. Most of you are going to have interviews in October, November, January, February, March. I mean, those are the high points of the interview season. Okay? What should your goals be going into this when you get ready for an interview at a health professional school? These are just two that come to mind for us, but you may have some others. But certainly personalizing your application by presenting yourself in the best light possible. You heard that word personalizing last week when we talked about the essay. This is kind of your next chance face-to-face to personalize your application in a room with people that are going to be deciding on your application. And then secondly, and a goal that a lot of you, I think, neglect a little bit is scrutinizing the school in order to be able to make the best decision. A lot of you are so worried about the first goal that you kind of forget about the second goal, and if you are lucky enough to have multiple acceptances at the end of this process, you have a little hard time making up your mind because you really weren't... I'm not saying you interrogate the people who are interrogating you. You don't turn the tables on them and say, you know, I'm shopping around for medical schools and I'd like to know what you can offer me. That's not the way you go about this process. I think we've made it clear enough that this is a very competitive process. But you do need to keep your eyes open and be very observant in this process and think about where a school... which school has qualities that fit things that you want out of a school. If you don't even know what you want out of a school, then by the time you go off to an interview, you might have a running list of qualities, okay? And do a little scrutinizing. What are their goals? I mean, their goals are to obviously pick who they want to see walking down the hall next year. And that's why I mentioned personality, because I hate to say it, but a lot of this does come down to personality, and a lot of it comes down to who do we want, not as colleagues, but maybe as classmates, if you're being interviewed by a med student, or students in their class, if you're being interviewed by a professor, or just part members of the med school or dental school community. I mean, that, you know, who do they want to see walking down the hall and go, hey, you know, I interviewed you last year. You got in. That's great. I'm really happy. It's almost a gut level kind of thing. And they also want to pick who's going to thrive in their curriculum and in the school's climate. And that's where fit comes into play. Like, who fits the mission of this medical school best and who's going to be happy here? Because those of you that are happy in medical school are going to thrive, and those of you that thrive are going to get the best residencies, and obviously that's going to reflect nicely on the school. But it's also, you know, those people in med school admissions and med school administration care about, you know, your general desire to be there. So that's certainly their goals. Those are certainly their goals. What's the standard format for most interviews at a health professional school? Most of them are going to have two 30 to 45 minute conversations with anyone at the school, from a med student to the dean of the whole school. Not even the dean of admissions. I mean, you might be talking to the dean of the whole bloody place. Okay, so and it can really be anybody in between. You're going to usually have a tour. You're usually going to get some financial aid information. You're usually going to have a greeting by the dean. This is usually the dean of admissions, usually, or the director of admissions. Okay, you might meet some Princeton alumni at these. Some medical schools are very good about bringing out alumni from the institutions where the people interviewing that day come from, just to make it a little bit more welcoming. You may have never seen these people before, but you have something in common. Columbia is a good example of a school that traditionally has always put a sign up outside where you all wait before your interview, saying these are the colleges represented today. You know, pop by if you want to. And so some of the current medical students that are alums of those schools will pop by and say hi and make you feel comfortable. You know, if that happens, they're not evaluating you. There's no hidden camera. They're not, you know, they're just really literally popping by to say hi, and you have a connection with Princeton. Okay? Closed versus blind, or group versus one-on-one. I think this is fairly self-explanatory, but most medical schools in this country have open interviews, and dental schools as well, which means that the person interviewing you was at least asked, if not required, to look at your file before they met you. Okay? So now, whether or not they have, and whether or not they've spent all the time in the world reading this perfectly crafted personal statement that you work so hard on, or all the other things that you have to offer, will really depend on the individual and how committed they are to being a member of the admissions committee. But most schools have open interviews, meaning that they should have the information in front of them. If nothing else, they were handed to it right as they went in the interview. But they often have it the night before or a few days before. So those, I think, my personal belief is those are more fun. I mean, they know a little bit more about you, so you can hit the ground running in a conversation and take it somewhere, as opposed to them spending a lot of time asking you questions that you've already spent a lot of time and energy answering on the material you've given them. But I think there's another argument for the closed interview, meaning that they have not read anything about you. They may not even know your name. Well, they'll know your name, but they may not even know where you're from. They may not even know what undergraduate institution you represent. And I guess the argument for that is that maybe first impressions are really, really important. That's the way a patient meets you. A patient doesn't know your whole resume when they meet you. So I think the medical schools that have closed or blind interviews feel that way. They're a pretty small minority of schools in the country. I think last time I checked, Northwestern was one of them. Emory was one of them. USC was one of them. That's all I can think of right now. So, I mean, it's a very small group, okay? Group versus one-on-one. As I said, most medical schools give you one or two conversations one-on-one with someone at the medical school. But there are some schools, and actually Emory and Northwestern are also two that I can think of off the top of my head, that you might have a one-on-one conversation, but then the next hour you meet with the other people interviewing that day. There may be 10 of you from different colleges that are all there interviewing that day. And you go into a room together, and either one person or maybe even a panel of people on the admissions committee ask you some questions. Northwestern usually gives you a project to work on or something to discuss for an hour, and they watch you. There's certainly reasons for doing that. I understand it's more stressful. I mean, obviously that would be a more stressful situation than just having a conversation. And again, they are a very small number of schools. Emory and Northwestern are the only two I can actually think of that have that. Your MSAR, your online access to the MSAR, the Medical School Admissions Requirement Book, will take you through school by school and answer this question for you. So there may be a few more that I'm not aware of right now. But the closed interviews and the panel, more stressful type interview, or the group interview, is a little bit of a thing of the past. I mean, my sense is that it's a trend in med school interviewing that's fading away. So someone, your parents' generation, or someone even 10 years ago applying to medical school might have had a lot more of those types of things. Okay. All right, now that I've said that, I went right to parting advice. Before we get to the handout, I wanted to just kind of ask you guys right now, since there aren't too many of you here, to share with me a little bit what your biggest concerns are about the interview. Given what you've either heard from other people or when you picture yourself going off to this interview next October, what are your anxieties? What are your concerns? Yeah.
That if you hand in your MCAS and secondaries earlier than others, then you are favored to get an interview because they're less tired reading the application.
Right. Earlier the better, definitely. I think we've kind of said that till we're blue in the face, haven't we? I feel like I say that every hour on the hour. But yeah, definitely earlier the better. And that's certainly not something that's unique to Columbia. I mean, all these schools, you're going to be more likely to be invited to an interview if you get your AMCAS and your secondary in early. You know, we were telling you to get your AMCAS in early June and then get those secondaries filled out quickly after that. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. That doesn't determine when you get the interview.
It doesn't determine it, but it certainly helps you get an interview early. Okay? By the deadlines that you might see on a website, that like on the AMCAS website that they might post, you know, the deadline for submitting an AMCAS to our school is October 15th. Or usually November 1st. By those deadlines, most medical schools' interview schedules are already 30 to 40% full. So, you know, if you were to wait that long to apply to medical school, the chance of getting an interview drops really dramatically just because they don't have any, I mean, they're only interviewing 500 people and 30% of 500 people have already taken a slot. Okay, so. Yeah, I'm gonna write down some of your other concerns and just make sure we get to them later, but what other things, yeah. love to meet you, but I'm not here. Good. We'll get back to that. And if I don't get back to this, make sure you remind me again. But that's a very common one. How many of you are going to be abroad next year? Really, just a couple of you? Okay. There are more of you I know in the pool applying. What else? Quick, grab it before the music starts again. Where do you stay? Wait, I don't think you can really stay with people on the admissions committee.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you're like high school student.
Might be a conflict of interest. What?
Like, high school student
sure, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Where do you stay, and what's the experience like when you're not being interviewed? I mean, what are you doing when you're off the clock? Yeah.
Nikki? Like,
yeah, good question. Like, what do you ask them? When they say something like, do you have any questions about our school? What do you say and what do you come up with? Good. What else? Yeah.
How earlier than the actual interview, if you get an interview, would they let you know? Because, like, if you have, you know, club activities or classes, then they let you know, like, the day before, it's like, can you come in tomorrow?
So how much advance notice do they give you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good question. Again, it's going to vary from school to school, but generally speaking, that's a good question. Yeah?
If you ask them a question that you've read on your AMCAS, should you assume they haven't read it, or assume they want you to take it?
If they ask you a question you've already talked about on your AMCAS,
like,
and it's an open file school where they were supposed to have looked at your AMCAS, what do you do? Or what do you assume? Okay. What else? Any more other questions? Yeah? Okay, especially if that city's far, far from where you live and you're spending a lot of money to get there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure,
that's a good question. Yeah, Matt? Right. Do the interviewers have, say that again?
All right, so like,
is there a script they're following, kind of? Right.
Does the second interviewer have a first interview?
No. took care of that question. No, I mean, they don't. There will be some repetition, definitely, and some redundancy in what you talk about. Especially if you have certain things that spark kind of a universal interest in other people, you're going to have to say it over and over and over again. Yeah, they won't pass the comments and go, oh, they already talked about this last hour. Let's ask him something new. Is that what you're asking? Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think they'll do that. Yeah, let's ask one. Let's do one more. Yeah. Right. Wow. Prejudging. Okay, that's a good question. I hope to get all these. These are actually somewhat unique questions, which is great. And if I don't get to them all, just remind me again, okay? What I want to do next is I do want to actually go over this handout, though not both of them. The one that's the top 10 common errors or what have you is something Ms. Deutsch did a couple years ago, and it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And it's, you know, read it and file it away. I think it's a very helpful document. But we're not going to go over that today. What I do want to go over is just the more general kind of before, during, and after interview experience. Some of these things I might have said already, but a lot of them I don't think I have. Okay? You know, we talked about the two main goals health professional schools might have when they meet you. The only reason there are two of them is because to apply to every single health professional school, you have to be that broad in general. But this opening paragraph of this handout, you know, see where I say, what do they look for? Different schools are going to weigh these things differently, I think, depending on their philosophy or what type of doctors they want to train. But they're all things that you should be thinking about when you go into the interview, no matter where you interview, okay? They're going to be looking for signs of your compassion. We've talked about this before. Your ability to empathize, your self-awareness and your maturity, which are kind of the same thing in a lot of ways. Your familiarity with the profession, especially dentistry and vet school, but even med school, obviously, as well. But those of you that are applying to other health professional schools, they want to make sure you're really aware of what that other health profession is, okay? Ability to communicate, cultural competency. What do we mean by cultural competency? You guys know what that means? Yeah, exactly. Hopefully your track record of having dealt with people from different backgrounds, or if not, your ability to at least convince them that you can. Ability to work well with others, and composure under stress. Okay. Above all, they look for what is often missing on your formal application, an indication of how you interact with patients. At least, and this is a quote I already gave you, at least one admissions director we know asked herself if she can imagine referring her mother, actually, to you for help in the future. That's a high test to pass, obviously, when you haven't even gone to medical school yet. But there's a certain level of thoughtfulness and maturity and professionalism that she would look for, and with the full understanding that you don't have the medical training yet. But you know, if she couldn't picture sending someone she really cares about to you someday, 4 years, 8 years, 10 years, 20 years hence, then you really weren't getting in her medical school probably. Think about that. The three most common errors, and I think they're on that list that Ms. Deutsch did of 10, but the ones that we see over and over again in the pre-application interview that you do with us, and that we hear from health professional schools when they respond about how people do in interviewing, the number one is certainly not listening. Being so concerned about saying something that you're not really paying attention to what's being asked. Coming across as arrogant in an effort to appear confident. You know, a lot of you certainly want to come across as confident. A lot of you actually mentioned confidence as something that you admire in physicians when we asked you that question, if we asked you that in your interview with us. But confidence and arrogance are two different things, and some of you try so hard to, I don't know, sweep a perceived weakness under the rug or just act like you're the number one candidate for medicine that's ever come along, that you come across as really kind of full of yourself. And medical schools obviously are not in the business of, or they don't want to be in the business of producing more physicians that are overconfident and arrogant, okay? Because I think that is a stereotype of the profession that's already well established. Being overly cautious and formal when asked about your personal background and interests. And I mentioned that last week a little bit about the essay, but it comes up again in interviewing when you're asked to talk about your background or where you're from, and you keep it very formal and don't take any risks revealing anything about what makes you unique. And if you're someone who's a little bit more introverted or someone who's a little bit more shy, that's a real challenge. But that is a fairly common interviewing mistake, error, what you want to call it. Because it would deny admissions personnel what they need to do to have to distinguish you from other people. You're only talking in broad generic terms. You're not talking about anything that's unique to you. Okay. Remember, the interview is your next chance after the essays to personalize your application. Now, what are you going to do to get ready for the interview? You're going to respond immediately to questions, to invitations. How long you're going to have, whoever asked that, was that you, Eric? How long you're going to have to get ready for the interview? It's really going to vary from school to school, but it's very rare fairly rare that they interview you for a date next week. I mean, they invite you to interview for a date next week. It's much more common that it's at least a month in advance, okay? Later in the season, if it's very late in the season and they're, I'll be perfectly frank with you, like the last week or two of the interview season at their school, and they want to interview for a wait list, they just kind of want to get a wait list together, they may in some cases, you know, email you and say, can you come next Friday for an interview? But if that's the last week or two of their interview season and they're giving you no more than 7 days to get ready for it, you can rest assured you're interviewing for the wait list and not for an actual position at their school. That's kind of one of those unwritten things, okay? But usually you'll have at least a month to get ready. A lot of medical schools these days will give you a calendar or a scheduler on their website to pick your own date. So they'll just invite you to go to the website and it's 5 o'clock. Yeah, I feel like it's New Year's Eve. Anyone want to go out there and, you know, join in the revelry? Go ahead. Revelry. But anyway, so that answers your question generally, but you would have some control over it at some schools. You could schedule your own date, okay? The most helpful probably takeaway from this is if you can, try to schedule the interview as soon as humanly possible in order to do a good job at the interview. And, but there's some urgency, but a lot of the urgency in this whole process is waning a little bit by the time you get to the interview stage. You know, all this getting your applications in early, get the secondary in early, all this kind of, once you get invited for an interview, if you're in a foreign country and you're not coming back for another 6 weeks, that's okay. Okay, if you pick the dates that you're coming back to the country and you've told the medical schools maybe on your secondary, I'll be back between these dates, and if I'm fortunate enough to get an interview, you know, I want to let you know I'm going to be here then, and they invite you 6 weeks earlier than that, don't think you just lost your chance at that medical school. That's fine, okay? Or if you know you have a major deadline either for extracurricular activities or academic commitments, they want to interview on Dean's date, whatever, you can push it back a few weeks. It's not going to keep you from getting in that school if you interview well, okay? So pick a date where you can do the best you can in the process. Make sure schools and our office obviously have up-to-date contact information for you throughout the process. Familiarize yourself with how your emails handle spam. I mentioned this last week, but a good number of interview invitations, just like secondary invitations, do occasionally end up in your junk folders, and you want to make sure you know they're there, so remember to check them. This is, again, you know, when I said at the top of the hour, a lot of this is common sense, but I do feel like I need to remind you guys to do things like check your voicemail greetings and use email addresses that are at least somewhat professional. I got an email this afternoon. I hope this isn't a friend of yours. Okay, I'll pick a different example. I got an email this afternoon from someone who said, whose email address was Made in Peru. Okay? She's from Peru. Isn't that cute? But is that really the thing you want medical schools to, I mean, shouldn't your email address just be kind of, you know, C. Smith? Think about your email address and how great it's been in college to have that email address and how people chuckle when they see that email address. But do you want people at medical schools? You can't control how they're going to react. So it's probably better to go a little bit safer with things like your email. Certainly your voicemail greeting that doesn't even identify who you are and has you and your roommates all laughing in the background and, you know, singing last Saturday night when you were drunk is not the voicemail that you want med schools to get when they call you. Actually, that would only apply to a phone in a room, which doesn't really exist anymore. Sorry. But on your cell phone, I guess you could do it on your cell phone, too. But there used to be these things called landline phones where, you know, like I had a phone in college that was down the hall, and we all shared it. I know, crazy. and things like Facebook, some of the medical schools that have visited us have been asked this in the past, and, you know, and there's I know there's a lot of talk about it out, like on, I don't know, studentdoctor.net and things like that. I can say with confidence that most med school admissions directors and deans do not have time to go to all of your Facebook pages and see how you present yourself on Facebook, okay? They just don't have time. But if there's anything else in your application or anything else in the interview that raises a red flag for some reason, then they go right there. So, you know, most of you don't have anything like that. But if for some reason you say something really odd in an interview or you act unprofessionally, no one at Princeton has ever done this, but there, it's not complete urban legend that med school applicants have tried to get a date from the med student that's giving them a tour. You know, acted just completely unprofessionally. There have been comments, I mentioned last week humor and making sure you use humor in a way that isn't at other people's expense. Well, if you did use humor at someone else's expense and it was really offensive, that admissions director, if you were at all even still in contention, I mean, you might not even be going to that school, but if for some reason there were other things about you that they really liked, or the people who interviewed you had very different impressions of you, and they were, you know, one person ranked you the lowest possible ranking because you said something really offensive, and someone else thought you were the best thing since sliced bread, then they might go to your Facebook page and see how you're represented. And if everything on Facebook, if you have no privacy settings on Facebook, you haven't bothered to lock anybody out, and it's just pictures of you acting like an animal, then, you know, they don't want to see you walking down the hall next year. Okay? So please think about that. Read the med school's website thoroughly. Learn about the curriculum. For at least for med schools, the MSAR offers this whole education section now online for each medical school once you purchase the book and online access. Review your secondary and supplemental applications for the school as well as your AMCAS or your ADSES that you submitted. You should be prepared to talk about any activity or detail you included. And the answer to your question is don't shy away from repeating something that's already on the application. And you certainly don't want to point out how, you know, stupid they are for asking you that question. You know, but I don't think it's wrong necessarily to say, well, as you know, on my application, I did talk about this, but, you know, let me you know, do it politely, but you can at least gesture to the fact that you have already discussed this on your application. If nothing else, sometimes you can save some time in an interview and you can remind them, oh, yeah, no, I read about that. Let's move on. Let's do something else, you know. But that's as far as you want to go. You certainly don't want to decline to answer the question because you'd already answered it on the application, okay? I'm pleading the fifth because, you know, I've already answered that. If you suspect that interviewing is not your strength, it would be a good idea to arrange practice interviews with a fellow student in addition to the PAI you did with us. I wouldn't recommend you do that with a friend. I would recommend you do that with someone maybe sitting here today that you don't really even know that well, that you've maybe taken classes with but never, you know, socialized with, because a little bit of discomfort in that situation is probably a better indicator of how you're going to behave in a real interview than just doing this with your friends or your parents, okay? So think about that. The HPA interview report you'll hear a lot about if you haven't already, but they are available on our website under Application Process Interviewing, and these are anonymous reviews of former Princeton applicants to medical school that they have filled out at schools all over the country when they got back from their interviews. And there aren't as many of them in there as I would like, and so we're always kind of trying to recruit you guys to complete more as the season goes on, and you'll hear about this next year. But the 2011 group that applied, that, you know, is just finishing up right now, did fill out a good number of those. And I know the 2010 group filled out even more. So, you know, you have some recent information of just the last 2 years about how people who came before you, what people who came before you encountered when they went to school X for their interview, okay? There is something out there called interviewfeedback.com, which is part of the student doctor network that you may have already been on online. We created the HPA Princeton thing because I really felt like you guys were more reliable sources of information. You're more reliable narrators in the process than just any Joe out there applying to medical school, okay? I don't mean to say that, but I wouldn't spend a lot of time on interviewfeedback.com if I were you. People who had 18 interviews and are walking on water would love to go out there and flaunt it to you. And the people that really are having a poor interviewing experience, often because of some personality issue or some real chip on their shoulder, are out there posting. You know, Dr. whatever at this school had it in for me. Dr. whatever at this school did that. It's amazing to me how much kind of weird Unabomber paranoia there is out there when you read that kind of stuff. So please trust your classmates and your fellow Princeton alumni more than just anyone out there posting anonymously about interviews. Okay? It might be entertaining to go look at that, but I wouldn't use it as a reliable source. Let's skip down just to the bottom. This is something that seems, again, like common sense, but some of you suffer, no one mentioned this, but some of you suffer a little bit of anxiety and are afraid to ask because you think it's a stupid question, but what should you wear for these things? You know, a suit is probably best in these situations. A lot of you already have suits because you showed up for your PAIs in suits, but we certainly didn't require that of you. And if you don't have one and you can't afford one, then please don't worry about it. But if you can purchase one or get one sometime in the next 6 months or 3 months, it might be a good idea to do that. Not necessarily because med schools or dental schools expect that of you to all have suits on, but everyone else interviewing is probably going to have one on. And I think there's a certain comfort level that you have if you're sitting there with other people interviewing that day dressed like they are. You know, it's kind of like the email address issue. You know, I'm not saying you should all blend in. I mean, if anything, we've been telling you to be unique and do, you know, remember what's unique about yourself. But in things like dress and things like email addresses, things like your fondness for purple hair or I don't know, tattoos, things like that, just be a little bit careful when you go into these interviews. And if you can go a little bit more, and I hate hearing myself say this, I always want to kind of slap myself, but going a little bit more on the conservative side of things is probably a smart thing to do. Why? Just because everyone interviewing you is a conservative person? No. The guy interviewing you at a medical school may very well be in a Hawaiian shirt and flip-flops. So it's not about, you know, dressing corporate because corporate people are interviewing you. What's it about? How patients might react to you when you go into a clinical setting, and you're going to be coached when you get to medical school to, you know, act and look professionally. And so you want to make sure the interview is along those same lines. Women don't need to certainly wear a skirt. Pantsuits are fine for women. Skirts should be appropriate length. Did I say on here, if you turn the page? Yeah, go easy on the cologne. Oh my God. Those of you of the male gender tend to not wear cologne very often, and when you leave our offices sometimes after your PAIs, I have to open the window and air out the office, okay? Women don't tend to have this problem because I think they just maybe wear cologne a little bit more. Maybe they don't, but it tends to be guys that do this. But you know, when you if getting dressed up for you means splashing yourself with cologne, let's revise that, okay, a little bit. You don't need to do that. And, you know, simple things like if you drive, plan for parking and rush hour traffic, make sure you have good directions, plan to arrive early, plan for bad weather, get sleep, okay? Obvious stuff. But think about those things. And the only thing else I would say about directions and parking and things like that is the school that you're the most familiar with is often the school that you're almost late for your interview for, okay? It's kind of the reverse of what you might think. So if you grew up in a city with a medical school that you feel like you're fairly familiar with, or you have friends that are students there or what have you, there's a school that you did research at, I don't know, whatever it is, and you're really familiar with that school, you tend to be overconfident about how long it's going to take to find the admissions office and where you park and all those kinds of things. The school that you don't know much about in a city that you've never been to, you're going to fly to the night before, check into a hotel, stake out the whole thing, find out, you know, basically leave popcorn trail to the admissions office. I mean, most of you guys will do that so that you know what you're doing the next morning, but the school that you're more familiar with is a school you're going to be running in with 1 minute to spare saying, oh, I didn't know the admissions office was here. So think about that. During the interview, expect the unexpected, expect to wait, expect to meet other interviewees. Sometimes you guys forget that you are other people interviewing the same day you are, and that can be a little intimidating sometimes. You know, there will be other people there that day that are also wanting a seat at that medical school. Bring a professional looking folder and pen. This is just our advice, but it's fairly common sense. In case you want to make some notes immediately following the meeting, we don't recommend you bring things like your book bag and your backpacks into the interview with you. Purses are certainly acceptable. In most instances, you shouldn't take notes during the interview, but after, and note the names and positions of the people interviewing you, okay? You can write things down during the interview if you absolutely have to, but it's a little, when I said before that you don't really want to be interrogating the people interrogating you, it's a little aggressive to say, oh, let me write that down, you know, while the person is talking, and because then they suddenly become the person being interviewed and you become Katie Couric. So if anything else, you want to listen politely, answer the questions. But if there are things that are occurring to you as you're talking about that school or questions you want to ask later, then try to remember them. And the minute that interview's over, go sit in the hallway or go stand in the hallway and get the stuff written down, because you do want to remember that stuff. But I think it's a little odd sometimes when people pull out pens and paper in the middle of the interview, okay? Turn off your phone. Listen. I don't know if anyone asked this at the top of the hour, but a common concern is if I don't understand the question or don't even know what to say, is it okay to ask for clarification? Yes, you're much better off doing that and maybe risk sounding a little clueless than heading down the road of, I have no idea what I'm talking about because I didn't understand the question and I'm just going to keep talking until I dig myself into a big hole, okay? So please, if you don't understand what's being asked, those of you that, sometimes this will come up with research or things like, you've done some very sophisticated research one summer and the guy interviewing you or the woman interviewing you gets very excited about what you've done, but then suddenly starts rattling off her own research and you have no idea what she's talking about. Ask, okay? Show some curiosity, show that you really want to know what she's up to. Don't assume that acting like you know what she's talking about is the better way to go, okay? Let the interviewer control the interview. Please, don't be, this is kind of along the lines of pulling out the pen and paper. Don't be so eager to highlight your accomplishments that you interrupt the interviewer or shift the focus to the interviewer without being prompted. Think before you speak. It's certainly okay to slow down and pause. Take note of how fast or how slowly you're talking. If you say something you regret, move on. Don't let it rattle you. You probably will say something you regret. You may regret it the minute you say it, or you may regret it that night or 2 weeks later, but looking back on your interview experience, especially the first interview you have, you're going to say something you regret, but please just move on, and whatever deal you're making of it, I can tell you right now, they're not making as big of a deal of it, probably. Pay attention to your habits of speech, which is one of my favorites. Pay attention to the interviewer, make good eye contact. Try to use his or her name in conversation. Be sensitive to the interviewer's needs for you to elaborate on a point or perhaps be quiet so that the interview can progress. Use your powers of observation. Do they look frustrated or bored? Do they look like they want to hear more? A common example I use of this, and maybe, actually I think this is probably the place to say it, is that sometimes the best interviews, when you guys come back and fill out those interview reports and I go and look at them, sometimes the best interviews that people have had are ones that are about one thing that you said at the top of the hour that the interviewer got excited about, and the interview went that direction, and you talked about it for the whole hour, okay? So I think the example I use in this handout is, you know, gourmet cooking. If you're a cook, for some reason, I don't know why you would be, but if you were a cook, and you mentioned that, and they just got back from France last summer, and they want to talk to you about French cooking, and you know something about French cooking, what are you showing them? You're showing them your communication skills, you're showing them your ability to act professionally, you're showing certainly your ability to listen, you're showing them a lot of things talking about something that you would never expect to have been talking about in your health professional school interview, okay? So let, you know, there are some eccentric people out there interviewing you, and there's a difference between doing what I just described and letting the interview, you know, flail way off track and be all about the guy interviewing you and not about you. So, I mean, at some point you may need to assert yourself a little bit if they're wasting your, you know, your precious minutes you've got to say something. But often, someone, especially a more seasoned interviewer, someone who's been doing this for a long time, will get very excited about one thing that they know about you, where you're from, or Princeton, or, I mean, it could be whatever. And don't resist that and force the conversation back to the next item on your resume, okay? Yeah. You mean to ask? Sure, of course, yeah. I mean, I think if you're genuinely interested, I mean, I wouldn't do it as a tactic, but I mean, if you're genuinely interested, yeah. Especially if it ties in directly to something that you've done yourself or, you know, I mean, your thesis or something may be related to something that they've done. And that may be the topic of the whole conversation. You may never get past that. But don't feel like that was a bad interview, okay? Because there are a lot of things, as I said at the beginning of this handout, that they're looking for that they can gauge and evaluate talking about almost anything. Okay. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Okay, we talked about that. Be ready with questions about the school. And Nikki, this is your question. Questions about the school's curriculum, clinical or research strengths, student services, faculty, local community are all appropriate. Questions already addressed on their website and in catalogs are not. And the best way that I think, this is my personal view of it, but the way I would go about trying to come up with questions to ask, if you have looked at their website and you've done your homework and you kind of feel like you do know the school pretty well, is to go one step beyond that and put yourself in your imagination in the place of a first-year med student at that school. And you can do that maybe by talking to people who are first-year med students at that school. But you know, use your powers of imagination while you're there that day and look around and say, okay, if I were here next year, you know, I know there's a student organization that deals with whatever. I know there's a free clinic where I can volunteer, you know. And that was important to me in college. And look, they have a free clinic here, a community health clinic, where I on Friday afternoons can volunteer. But if you take it one step further and put yourself in the situation in the position of a first-year med student, say, well, if I were here volunteering on Friday afternoons at the community health clinic, what would my questions be about that experience? Then you tend to come up with the questions that are more specific and aren't insulting because they aren't already answered on the website. So, you know, how realistic is it for a first-year student to really even have time on Friday afternoons to volunteer? How do I get to the free clinic if I don't have a car? What is the basic demographic of the patients coming into the free clinic? Do I need to know a foreign language if I'm going to work there? Are third and fourth year med students given priority to work there? I mean, those are pretty specific questions, but they certainly show that you're really interested, and they show that you're taking it seriously, and they show that you already know there's a free clinic. Okay, so I mean, does that help?
Yeah.
Kind of come up with a list of questions. Okay. Be respectful of everyone you meet. More than one interviewee has been rejected from being rude to administrative staff while showing the supreme politeness to people they perceive as being an authority of some way. And I mentioned that before, but you may be interviewed from anyone from a current student to the dean of the school, and the current student may or may not be on an admissions committee, may or may not have a voting say in your fate, and anyone in between as well. You really don't know that, and you're really not, you shouldn't need to worry about that, because you should be respectful and professional to everybody, okay? And there have been, actually, with Princeton students, this is not urban legend either, there have been a couple instances where a med school has called me and said, do you realize that one of your applicants did this? And I was like, well, no, how would I know that? I wasn't there. I don't know that. But I can only think of two instances in the last 6 years, and they were both instances where one of our applicants treated the receptionist horribly. And then went in and was very nice to the doctor who was interviewing them. And I'll be honest with you, you guys don't treat Jen horribly. I don't think we've ever, but there's been a little bit of difference sometimes when Jen tells you something you don't want to hear in our office, the way you guys behave when you're stressed out and you're in a hurry and, you know, you missed dropping hours by 10 minutes or you came and the list was full, oh, God, you know, and you storm out. Well, okay, we're not a med school, but if we were a med school, is that really the best way to behave? So be thinking about that. You know, if you don't plan well, if you're hauling your suitcase from the hotel because you're on your way to the airport after the interview, that's fine. Ask the receptionist very politely if you might leave your suitcase somewhere while you go through your interview. Don't storm in and say, where can I put this? Okay? I mean, there's a difference there. And that receptionist may very well go right into the director's office after you leave and say, look, I just wanted to let you know, if I were a nurse at a hospital or if I were a patient, I wouldn't want this person to be my doctor. Okay, so think about that. I know you all sit here and go, oh, well, why is he telling me this? Of course. But it happens when you're stressed out, when you're running late, when you're nervous, when you've got a cold, I don't know, whatever. It happens when you're not thinking clearly, okay? After the interview, reflect on what happened, learn from your mistakes. As I said before, move on. But also, you know, take some notes and try to remember what you did well so that you can take that knowledge with you to the next one. Complete the reports. For the people coming up behind you, it's very helpful for you to go online and fill out a report about the school before your memory of that situation gets stale. And we do suggest you sending a thank you note. It's kind of old-fashioned, but and some medical schools will say they don't want one. I guess if they openly say on the day of the interview they don't want a thank you note, then don't send one. But more often, the worst that would happen is it's just neutral. It just goes in your file, or maybe it doesn't even make it into your file. But you know that you've done the professional thing and thanked the usually one or two people that have interviewed you for spending that time with you, okay? and this is certainly a reason to know who interviewed you. So if you don't know how to spell their name or don't know what their name even was, which hopefully you will, but it's okay to call the admissions office and say, look, I had an interview last Thursday. I just wanted to make sure I got the spelling right of Dr. whatever, okay, who you met with. That's perfectly fine, okay? Before we get to new questions that have come up, let me make sure I'm getting to everything here. Let me just go back and retrace my steps here because I think there were a bunch of things that I didn't get to that you guys said at the early. Where do you stay? Most health professional schools are going to expect you to find your own lodging. There are some that will offer to put you up with a current med student, and by all means, you know, take them up on that if you want to. It's not the most comfortable thing in the world usually, but you do get a good sense of the school by, you know, hanging out with the current students. So, you know, use your judgment. The most important thing, I think, is getting a good night's sleep the night before your interview, so be, you know, a little cautious about just doing that all the time, but usually, always, the person who you might be staying with has volunteered to the admissions office to host people, so, you know, hopefully they understand. you've hosted maybe pre-frosh or whatever, and, you know that, you know, you don't keep them up all night. Or maybe you do, I don't know, but you shouldn't at a med school. What to ask them? Schools in the same city, who asked that question? Yeah, it is certainly within your right to, let's say you got an interview at Stanford. Yay, great. And you also applied to UCSF, and the Stanford interview is already on the schedule, and then UCSF invites you to interview. For you to say, I will be in San Francisco on this date, you don't need to tell them why or what, but to say, I just wanted to let you know, it would be great if I am flying from the East Coast, and it would be great, you know, I will be in San Francisco on this date if I could schedule my interview around that date. They know what you're doing. I mean, they kind of know why. And the schools that sit in the same city, like Stanford and UCSF, or all the New York schools, they're pretty aware of why you're saying that. But it's certainly within your right to ask, okay? They may say no, and if you're spending hundreds of dollars on airfare to get to California, that does get expensive if you have to go back. But you're certainly within your right to at least say, I'll be in the city, okay? I think it makes a lot more sense to them if they know you're living in New Jersey right now and it's a California medical school. It doesn't make so much sense if it's a New York medical school and you're here at Princeton and all you have to do is hop on a train. Not really, unless you're abroad. And I think if you're abroad, I think that's a perfectly legitimate question, saying, look, I'm going to be back in this country, and if, like I said earlier, if I'm lucky enough, if I'm fortunate enough to get an interview at your school, could you possibly schedule it between these dates? But if you're not abroad and you're in the United States with a major airport to get, it's a little, it can just backfire on you to say, you know, I'm available for these dates if you would like to interview me. Okay. Yeah. Do you hear the question? What if you have a job and you can't tell your employer that you're leaving next week? I don't know. That can be tough. I mean, it can be tough for some of our faculty if you're a current student, and it can be tough for job supervisors if you're out in the working world. I mean, the only thing I would tell you is when you're going into this process, you know, the interviews are going to start now several months from now still. We're still well ahead of the game. Let that person know as early as you can that you're applying to medical school. And I know that can be sometimes tricky if it's an employer, because it means you're leaving. And that may be news to them, that if you get in dental school, you're taken off, you know, the summer of 2012. But if you can be open, it kind of depends on the situation, but if you can be open, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I would tell them what you're doing. And then they're much more likely to be able to give you next Friday off, okay? It's rare that it would be next Friday, though. I mean, usually you're allowed to give them more advance notice, okay? Worst case scenario is that they say no, that's actually a day where you have to be in the office, you're needed that day, you can't go, and tell the dental school that, and they usually are flexible on their end of moving it, okay? But that's actually not as common as most of you think it will be. I mean, usually things do work out, okay? Other questions that you guys asked at the top were, what have I forgotten? Prejudging. Who asked about, or I wrote down prejudging. It wasn't exactly what you asked. Was that your question too? What they've done when they've invited you for an interview, guys, is they've usually decided that you can handle the workload at their school and that you look like an interesting person. And that's as far as it's gone, okay? I mean, that's why they interview. Health professional schools are different than law schools and most graduate schools. And business schools, because they have this interview as part of the process. I mean, they really want, and they spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of energy invested in the interview process. And like I said before, they can interview as many as 500 to 1,000 of you. You know, put yourself in the position of a director of admissions and think, okay, you know, she's got to basically herd cats. I mean, get a bunch of really busy physicians to all sign up for times to interview people for next year, and then show up for committee meetings every 2 weeks and decide on you know, all these applications and who we're going to admit to next year's class, that is a huge task. And they don't go to all that trouble if they've made up their mind before they even invite you to interview. So I think you should expect them to keep an open mind about you. They have decided that you can handle the work, and that's about as far as they've gotten. And those of you that have trouble getting interviews, 9 times out of 10, it is because there's some doubts about whether or not, you know, on their part, about whether or not you're academically ready or whatever. But once they invite you for an interview, you can rest assured you pretty much made it past that gate. Okay. And a common concern that no one really asked at the beginning is, another common concern is, well, are they going to grill me about my C and Orgo for an hour when I go to, you know, my interview? For that very reason, the answer is usually no. I mean, they might in some way, but it, you know, to be honest, I find that if you have a nice interview that will actually divulge something about herself, that she'll often say, well, I'm grilling you about this because I got to see an Orgo too, and I just wanted to see what you would do. Or someone did this to me 20 years ago, and I thought it would be fun. But they're usually, you know, they're not interviewing people that they still have doubts about, okay, academically. How much advance notice? What to ask them? Questions on the end? I think, have I gotten to all of them that you guys brought up? Any of you asked a question at the beginning that I forgot? Okay. What new questions have come up? No. You didn't ask that at the beginning, though, did you?
No.
Oh, but you have that now. Yeah. Did you hear the question? Letters of interest, letters of intent. What are they? Or yeah, I mean, we'll talk a lot about this next year when it's actually relevant. We don't need to talk about it too much right now, but generally speaking, letters of interest don't carry much weight, and we don't usually recommend you send them. And what a letter of interest would just be, you know, a letter to a school that, you know, it's January and you haven't heard from them yet, and you just want to let them know you're still out there. You can do it if you want, and sometimes I do advise students to do it, but it's usually because they're so stressed out about not hearing anything that I almost feel like it's some way that they feel like they have some control over their fate, and, you know, writing that letter and saying, and it doesn't hurt. I mean, it never hurts, your case. But how much it helps is just really hard to prove in any way. Letters of intent are different. Letters of intent are usually come into play if you're waitlisted at a school and you're well toward the end of the interview season, and like this time of year, basically. And you're maybe accepted to another school, but you're accepted to school A, but you know you'd rather go to school B. And school B has interviewed you. You've seen school B from the inside out. You have credibility when you say you like it there. You're not just going by rankings or prestige or perception or what your friends told you or whatever. But you've actually been there. And then to send them a letter and say, I know I'm on your wait list. If you take me off your wait list, I will come to your school. That can carry a little bit of weight. It doesn't carry a lot, but it can carry a little bit of weight, at least at some schools, because when they do go to the wait list, if you have a letter in your file that says that, they know they're not wasting their time. They know they can call you, and you'll be joyful to have gotten the acceptance, and you will be there, okay? But the letter of interest, which you hear some about, you will hear these things called these letters of interest, and I find, to be honest, that it's really a lot of busy work that you don't need to be doing, okay? You do need to be verifying that your file is complete. I mean, I think you'd be foolish if you haven't heard anything from a school by January, not even an email saying your file is complete. Or a lot of schools these days have websites where you can go and just see the status of your application. And if the status of your application hasn't changed since you submitted your secondary last summer and it's said incomplete for 4 months now, then, you know, you shouldn't let that happen. I mean, you should be enough of a secretary to kind of manage that and just make sure your files are complete at all your schools if you haven't heard anything. But beyond that, just telling them one more time that you're still there is not is not really necessary. Good question. What else? Yeah.
Is the process of interviewing for any PhD programs?
It's a little bit different. It's just longer, like everything else with MD-PhD, and it's often a full day instead of half to two-thirds of a day. And sometimes it's overnight and into the next day. It kind of depends on the program. You would interview with people at the medical school that are not really interested in your research at all. And then you interview with a lot of people that are interested in your research. But the one thing that MD-PhD candidates kind of, the mistake they sometimes make is think that they will only be talking about their research, and they don't need to explain to them why they ever want to, you know, see a patient face-to-face or anything. And there will be some primary care physicians interviewing you. There'll be people from the medical school that really aren't invested in your research at all that might be interviewing you. But a bulk of your experience will be people who are interested in your research. And there's often a social event. Usually there's dinner or a reception or something for the MD-PhD candidates that are interviewing that day, because they have a lot fewer interview dates. Like Cornell only has 2 interview dates a year. A lot of them have maybe 5 or 6 interview dates. And so they bring all the MD-PhD people in for those dates, and then you mingle. So be prepared to introduce yourself a lot. It's a little more social. It's such a small world that it tends to be very different than the medical school thing. Let's do one more question, and then, you know, obviously you can ask me stuff later. Anything else? But this is a lot of information about interviewing, and I know it's still abstract to you because it's many, many months away. But those of you who are graduating need to think about this now. But well, what do you think, Jeff? I think before you head off to any interview, whether it's going to the airport to get on a plane or going to the train station to get on a train or getting in your car or getting on your bike or whatever, you should have with you a phone number and the name of the people interviewing you. And if something happens and you're running late, yes, I think a phone call would be very nice. Okay. I mean, that's just professional behavior, right? You'll find that they're amazingly sympathetic. I mean, you're certainly not the first person to get caught in a snowstorm on the way to their interview. It happens. So don't think you just blew it because of that. But you might have blown it if you just don't bother to even contact them and show up an hour late. Okay. Yeah. One more. Erica. Yeah, I don't have it on the slides, but if you look, Erica, at the very bottom of this handout, I think it's at the very bottom, at the very back, under resources, there are a couple of websites that you may already be familiar with. I don't know, if you've taken an ethics class, maybe this stuff has come up, or if you've had some of our faculty teach, you know, medical ethics or something like that. But there are places where you can do a little bit of research about different types of ethical issues before you go into an interview. It's becoming more and more common, actually, instead of less and less common, that you might get some question about, not necessarily about abortion. Abortion's such a hot topic. I don't know that, but something about along the lines of, I think one of these questions on here is, you know, who would you give the organ to if you had 3 potential people or whatever. Do a little legwork. I mean, the University of Washington is a really good website, the bioethics program there. The Virtual Mentor website is really good. That's run by the AMA. The Next Generation, which was started by Harvard pre-meds, but we'll forgive them. They have done some stuff on ethics. You know, if you haven't had a class, have no exposure to bioethics or medical ethics at all, and you want to know maybe what some of the issues are when you're asked a question like that, do a little homework ahead of time. I mean, that's the best way to prepare for it. Also remember that there's no right answer. I mean, it's ethics at some level, but usually there might be a wrong answer, but there's very rarely just one right answer. Thank God you guys are applying right now, because those poor freshmen that are coming in this fall that are going to be the class of 2015 and everyone who comes after them may very well be encountering ethical questions on their MCAT. There's now talk of changing the MCAT to put, tell your little sister and little brother this, just to stress them out. But they're talking about adding, because it is such a big deal, and this idea of professionalism is such a big deal, and having you guys think through ethical dilemmas out loud to demonstrate that you have an ethical backbone and you do think what might be right in a certain situation, or what's the most human way to behave, that type of stuff. That stuff is big, and the MCAT does not test you on that at all. And so traditionally it's always been left to the interview, and it's been left to your essay or just a gut feeling they have about you, or, you know, whatever. And so the MCAT, they're talking about adding some questions that test that on the MCAT. And, you know, like the example I got at a conference recently was community health clinic situation. It was like, you know, Brian is volunteering at a community health clinic, and his boss tells him to, or a food bank, and his boss tells him to only give one meal per family per week out. And the same guy comes back for a second time in the same week and says, well, my family's starving and we're hungry and I lost my job, and can you please, you know, break the rule? What should Brian do? There's a wrong answer, I guess, and the wrong answer would be just a really flippant response, like, you know, I don't know, it's not Brian's problem, you know, or whatever. You laugh, but... Okay, but reasoning that through and thinking, okay, well, this is the policy of the food bank. Maybe there's a larger picture at work. Maybe someone put that policy in place for a reason, going to the supervisor and figuring out what that reason is and being able to explain that to the person. You know, I mean, just in an interview, if that a question like that ever came up, you can think out loud. I mean, you can share your reasoning with them. You don't have to say, you know, when it's an A, B, or C question, which is actually very rare, this liver transplant question, you know. But you don't need to say the answer is B, you know. You can reason it through, okay? I mean, that's what they're kind of looking for. And there's usually no right answer. It's just really just designed to kind of think about your decision-making, to demonstrate your decision-making process, okay? That causes a lot of stress, usually the ethical type questions. All right, guys, I do have some parting advice on here. Is the slide even still up? Yeah. Remember the applicant checklist? I put them in the back of the room this time because some of you may have lost yours. Please follow along with that. Please do the interview reports and complete new ones. Remember that those of you graduating, you'll have a chance to come to drop-ins in cyberspace next year. Keep Jen updated. The interview thing, when I told you at the beginning of the hour that 0 to 18 was the range of numbers of interviews people had last year, how did I know that? Because you guys told us, okay? The AAMC does not give me that data, okay? And I don't just magically know these things. You have to report these things. What they give us is they give us where you applied. Well, you've given us where you've applied. But they give us where you applied, where you were accepted, where you were rejected, where you withdrew. I think that's it. And they give it to us in November of 2012. So you will be well on your way to your second block of courses as a first-year med student before we ever get that information. So if I'm to help you at all in this process in terms of just managing a waitlist situation or figuring out what the best school for you is or all that type of stuff, you need to let us know what's happening as it goes along. So this isn't just us trying to police you. It's really to your own benefit to let us know. And especially with interviews, because there's no data collection that the AAMC does about your interviews. So please let us know. Also, I should just mention real quickly about interviewing. If you're asked a question in an interview that goes beyond just making you a little uncomfortable, a little discomfort might be a good thing, but really you find incredibly offensive or ethically just rings a bell with you that was not appropriate, let me know, let Ms. Deutsch know, please let someone know. There have been very, very few instances. There are a few instances where someone's been granted a second interview because we've talked to the medical school, and the medical school is usually very aware of that person. That person has usually done that before. You're not usually the first. And they say, okay, we'll be happy to grant you another interview. If nothing else, someone at the admissions office does like to hear about people on their committee that might be, whatever, acting inappropriately. So please let us know. And then the last couple things, you have a decision to make after your interviews are over, so please remember to be observant and somewhat critical, but at the same time, keep an open mind about the schools. Since often applicants are surprised by certain schools, their favorite going into this process is not their favorite coming out. You view the interview as an opportunity, not a test. I mean, that's a little rosy, I know, because I know you're nervous for these things, but this really is, a lot of you do report on those reports when you get back how much fun the interview was. I know you may be surprised by this, but getting a chance to talk about why you want to be at that school, getting a chance to talk about what you've done in college, getting a chance to talk about yourself with someone who's listening, who cares, for half a day, can actually be a really fun experience. And so please remember that. And also please remember the thing I said before about keeping an open mind, because a lot of you come up with that list of schools based on whatever you can grasp. We've helped you. A lot of it may be metrics, GPA, MCAT score. A lot of it may be geographic things. A lot of it may be the highest ranked school you think you might have a chance at, all that kind of stuff. But every year, a lot of you come back from interviews surprised by which school you liked best and which school is the best fit for you. And in the end, you know, if the school's ranked 14th or 26th in the country by these random people at U.S. News and World Report, I don't know that that's really going to matter nearly as much as how happy you are at the school. So please remember that, okay? All right, guys. So we won't see you again. I miss you all already, but have a good summer, and we will see you in one form or another next September, okay?